The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
Well, it's time now for Boxed, our series where John Fardy, presenter of Screen Time, recommends a vintage TV series that deserves another look. And this week it's Fleabag. John Fardy, good morning and welcome.
Good morning to you too, Pat. And I've gone a bit more modern. People say I'm a bit old man river. Last time we did Frasier and stuff like that. So I just want to go right up to date with Fleabag, which I just think is one of the, you know, I was going to say great recent TV shows, but just one of the greatest TV shows of all time. That's a bold statement to make. Again, only 12 episodes. I seem to say this to you all the time, the Fawlty Towers rule, but there's something in having short series as opposed to these 10-year things that take over our lives. Phoebe Waller-Bridge is the creator and star of this. On the surface, it doesn't sound like anything that different. It might even sound like a subpar Sex and the City, a 30-something woman kind of navigating her way through life and love in London. But there is so much more to it than that.
Now, if you saw on the television listings the name Fleabag, you wouldn't know what to expect when you turned it on. Where does the title come from?
Well, you see, that's part of the magic of it. The character is never named, and we'll get to another famous character in it, played brilliantly by Andrew Scott, who was just known as the Hot Priest. And it was a very important motif that she was never named. Phoebe Waller-Bridge had this one-woman show called Fleabag at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival in 2013, I think it was. That was very successful. But TV executives weren't really sure if it was something that would translate to a TV show. Because, you know, that's happened many times. People see plays, particularly in a place like the Edinburgh Fringe, where it's a different environment and they don't always translate to screen. But by God, they did in this case. And I suppose, you know, the first season hit and it was hugely successful and a critical darling, you know, and it dealt with her negotiating a difficult family life, a really strange love life, and she was trying to, I suppose, find herself through sex, in essence. And she had a lot of one-night stands, and it was very graphic is probably the wrong word, but explicit about female sexuality, and it's, you know, the wrong time of day. But let's just say there was a famous scene of her alone in bed with a video of Barack Obama. I'll leave it at that. But that was one of the huge talking points of the first series. And it was really, you know, honest about female sexuality. That was certainly what people felt at the time. And after the first season, people thought, you're not going to do much better than that. And the second season just became something, you know, it's unparalleled in TV what she did in those six episodes in season two.
Now, you've got a couple of clips for those who've not seen Fleabag, so set the scene for the first one we're going to hear.
Yeah, now this is from her. One of the things she's dealing with is her family life is very troubled. Her mother has died, who she deeply misses. She's an on-off relationship with her father. She's close sometimes and not close sometimes to her very highly strung sister. Her best friend is a lady called Boo, who we only meet in flashback. And she is clearly haunted by her, and it appears, without giving a spoiler, may have inadvertently had some hand in her passing. And they deal with grief a lot in the show, and this is them remembering. There's a whole episode dedicated to her mother's funeral, and this is them playing out her mother's funeral. And in a real Fleabag kind of way, for some reason, she looks great that day. She slept funny on her hair, and she can't get this very chic kink out of it. So there's this, you know, heartfelt moment about the death of her mother, but also how great she looks. Take a listen to this.
I look so good.
It's okay, we can sort it out. Just take some of your makeup off.
I'm not wearing any makeup.
What? What has happened? I have never seen you.
I just woke up looking amazing, and then everyone's going to think I got a facial for my mother's funeral.
Oh, what the hell? You look incredible.
We're trying to mess her up.
Just no matter what I do with my hair, it just keeps falling in this really chic way.
Oh, God.
You look perfect.
Thank you.
Sorry, girls. People are starting to arrive.
Thank you.
You don't have to greet them if it's too. Gosh, you look gorgeous.
Thank you.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you.
You look glorious.
Thank you.
Have you spoken to Dad?
No, not yet. He's avoiding me.
My deepest condolences, girls. She was magnificent.
Thanks so much.
My God, you look well.
Thank you. Have you?
No, he's not really engaging.
She was a spectacular woman.
Thank you.
Darling, you look wonderful.
Oh, my God.
Hi, Claire.
Hi.
Gosh, grief clearly agrees with you.
Thank you, Jeremy.
I just don't know how Phoebe Waller-Bridge's even wrote that in a script, because it's terrific. It's all in the playing, of course, but wonderful stuff. Now, we have to talk about The Hot Priest and the performance by Andrew Scott.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the thing is, the chemistry between them was, I don't know how they did it. You really, really believed it. For people who don't know, in season two, she's cleaned up her act significantly. She's trying to get on better terms with her family. She stopped having casual sex. She stopped having sex at all. She's in essence celibate. And her new mother, who's marrying her dad, played brilliantly by Olivia Colman, is in a way the classic almost postmodern evil stepmother. She's this kind of horrible woman who's clearly going to ruin her father's life. And trying to be really trendy, they get a cool priest who's going to marry them, and he's played brilliantly by Andrew Scott. And he smokes, he curses, he's clearly lived a wild life before he's become a priest, but he has this, he actually seems like a bona fide believer in God and wants to administer to the flock, and gives this gorgeous speech at that wedding that actually happens between Olivia Colman and her dad about, you know, the power of love, and it's only the hopeful people who ever fall in love. People should watch that scene, if nothing else, his homily at their wedding. But their chemistry and where that relationship goes, again, I don't want to give spoilers, but she falls in love with him, and he's clearly falling in love with her as well. And the clip I selected here, this will give you a kind of definitive flavour of their relationship. Take a listen to this.
Do you think I should become a Catholic?
No, don't do that. I like that you believe in a meaningless existence. And you're good for me. You make me question my faith.
And?
I've never felt closer to God.
I couldn't give up sex forever. It's just too...
Celibacy is a lot less complicated than romantic relationships.
What if you meet someone you like?
I talk and drink and laugh and give them Bibles and hope they eventually leave me alone.
What if you meet someone you love?
We're not going to have sex. I know that's what you think you want from me, but it's not. It won't bring any good.
No, it might.
I've been there many times before I found this. Many, many times.
How many times?
Many.
Well, obviously, the question would remain, would they ever consummate the undoubted love between the pair of them? So, John, we don't want to spoil anything, do we?
No, we don't. But the way their relationship ends up is absolutely wonderful. And, you know, I talk a lot about the closing scenes in a TV show. And last time we talked about Frasier and that great ending episode. But this, to say the show ends with the two of them, the Hot Priest and Phoebe Waller-Bridge, at a bus stop and a fox, and she looks at the camera and looks away. And that sounds like, what? That's, you know, that doesn't sound like amazing TV. Trust me, it is absolutely remarkable. Possibly five of the best minutes ever committed to TV. And I should mention as well, and if you had to pick an episode, I would suggest to people season two, episode three, Phoebe Waller-Bridge does this thing where she, in a very meta kind of way, I hate that word meta, I swore I'd never use it, but there you go. She breaks the fourth wall. She brings the audience in a lot. But Andrew Scott's character is aware that she's doing this and keeps saying to her every time she does it, where are you going? Where are you going? And incidentally, this is the second time I've said this. It's before the watershed. But by all accounts, searches for religious pornography shot up after Fleabag series 2. I've just read that. This is not first-hand experience, but this is what I've been told by the internet.
I reckon Fleabag was a true original in terms of comedy drama, I suppose, because it's not just a laugh a second by any means. But, you know, can she ever follow that?
Well, thankfully, and I think rightly so, she's not going to do it anymore. And she said that. And the way it's ended, she really shouldn't, because it was the most perfect ending. But like, her star is in continuing ascendancy. She's up to all sorts. But interestingly enough, so bowled over were people by her writing that she was brought in to help on this much delayed last Daniel Craig James Bond movie, to help with the script, because they were having some problems all, and they thought she was the woman to do that. So amid all the stuff we're talking about you know, how important it was, how wildly entertaining it was, it's brilliantly written, and people who make James Bond movies were aware of that and asked her to help with a script. So the future is so bright for her, but she's not going to do Fleabag again, and I think that's probably for the best. If you watch all 12 episodes, you will say that is perfect 12 episodic TV, never touch it again.
Before we let you go, John, what's on Screen Time this week?
There is a brilliant new Matt Damon movie starting next week in cinemas called Stillwater. It's one of the best movies I've seen all year. And I'm talking to its director, Tom McCarthy, and also a fascinating movie, Pat. You'd be very interested in this, a documentary called The Most Beautiful Boy in the World. The kid who was 15, who played the young boy in Death in Venice. You might remember that movie from 1970.
Absolutely. Tadzio.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, his life after that film, having been found by Visconti and described as the most beautiful boy in the world, was a car crash after he appeared in that movie. And there's a fascinating documentary releasing this week all about that. So I'm talking to the director of that as well.
John Vardy, thank you very much.
Thank you.